All right, guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I am Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate, coming at you from the beautiful Courtyard Marriott Hotel in Washington, D.C. Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm doing solid, buddy. Story's the same with me. It's navigating the dadhood. We had, you were gracious enough to help me navigate recording this post bath time and pre bedtime, which I have to say, the dads out there will know that's a huge, huge deal. We're recording right in the time slot between the two most crucial times of the night. I feel good about my sleep arrangements tonight. I feel like I'm gonna get some good sleep.
You look like you could use it.
Thanks, man. It means a lot.
But I still think this is going to be a good one. We're going to talk a little bit of trade stuff at the top. And then at the end of the episode, we're going to just go through some takeaways we have now that we're essentially at the midpoint of the season, which is kind of hard to believe. Pelicans play the Wizards in D.C. tomorrow, which is Monday. That is game number 41. They are on a 48-win pace right now. I think I predicted 48 in our season preview pod. That is with Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum playing a grand total of 10 games together in the first half of the season. Hopefully that is a bigger number in the second half of the season, but it's going to be a while before we see those three on the court. But yeah, I think you generally, I mean, not without spoiling too much of this, you kind of have to be pleased with just the win total, you know, halfway in, considering all the injuries they've had to key players.
Certainly can't be mad. We've talked about it a few times, and it bears repeating, because if you've watched this team more than just this year, if one player went down in our history, that team lost every game. Now we have had different players go down. We've had multiple players go down at various points. We have not had the starting five in total all but 10 games the entire season, I think. And we've still got the wins that you needed to get. We still beat the teams that good teams should beat. And really all it really establishes is it lines the Pelicans up with the surefire playoff teams of the last 10 years, where like you miss a guy, and if you are good, you should be able to figure it out because you're good. And luckily we still have that. We have this NBA epidemic of, all but three teams can't win on the road. So the West
in general is just pretty mid this year.
It's
pretty mid,
which is great. I mean, look, I oft mentioned Jeremy Wilson has a great thread going of all of the various 4 through 9 seeds that the Pelicans would have to deal with during this stretch and how many losses behind us they are. And all of them, I haven't checked the Minnesota score recently, but Minnesota was tied with Houston going into the fourth quarter. Like, it just teams aren't that great, but the usual suspects are. Like, Denver can get a win against everybody. Memphis can get a win against anybody. Phoenix looks like they're headed into a really rough stretch, because CP doesn't look like he can carry you through the non-Booker stuff anymore. And they got a brutal schedule. If our January schedule is rough, Phoenix's schedule is hell. Them being a top four seed now seems like not a thing that's going to happen, which is crazy, which they should get Cam Johnson back and that should help. But yeah, the West is just, it's very, very muddled. People like to say it's wide open. The Clippers haven't panned out to be like anybody. I don't know why every single pundit went with these preseason projections on the Clippers, 50 plus whatever. You haven't seen the two guys play. Like, you don't know if Kawhi's going to play, and everybody's like so confidently like, well, man, the Clippers, they're going to be in the finals. Like, cool. Let's see what happens. Let's see if they can play 30 games together before the end of the season. Who knows? But yeah, it's wide open. And that's going to help us a lot because this is a rough stretch coming up for us. We're adapting with the injuries like we have been, but we got to scrounge some out with without two stars, which is a bit rough. Not my favorite.
So we are about a month out from the trade deadline, which is February 9th. Just had a couple notes, a couple thoughts as that date draws a little bit closer. First of all, if you guys, you know, care about the NBA, I would highly recommend subscribing to Mark Stein's newsletter. There's always a lot of good stuff. And I thought the one he sent out over the weekend had a lot of interesting notes and notes, you know, that could be relevant to the Pelicans. One of the nuggets in his columns, no one has been more in demand than Bogdan Bogdanovic in Detroit, who is owed $20 million next season and the $19 million the year after. Very, very good shooter, very, very skilled player. Mark noted that the Pistons are seeking an unprotected first for Bogdanovic. It's Bojan Bogdanovic.
Yeah, I was going to politely correct you. Bogdan is in Atlanta, but Bojan of Pistons ilk.
How could I get my Bogdanoviches?
I mean, there's only two. I mean, the same way that you could probably get your Bertanses mixed up, you know? They're pretty similar.
Yeah. Mark noted that there is a double-digit list of suitors for Bogdanovich's services, which kind of leads me into one of the things that I've heard around the league. Basically, there are so many potential buyers and there are so few sellers. Like, I think the market is in such a weird place now. And I think the biggest reason why is the play-in tournament. The play-in tournament has made it so many teams feel like they are in it later in the season, which I think overall is good. That was one of the purposes of the play-in tournament. The Pelicans were that team last year, by the way. I mean, I think in a normal year where there is not the play-in tournament, I don't know, maybe you don't see them swing for that trade for CJ McCollum. Maybe CJ McCollum doesn't want to come here because he's like, well, this team has no shot at making the playoffs. Like last year, you could at least sell him on, well, hey, if we get you, we got a really good chance of getting the play-in tournament. Once we get in the play-in tournament, who knows what could happen? And we know how that turned out. But yeah, that's, I just think, you know, the amount of potential buyers and so few sellers is going to make this where, like, as Mark noted, like there's gonna be so many teams who want a Bojan Bogdanovic, right? Like every team needs a wing who can shoot the ball, including the Pelicans. Like that's, you know, like rim protection and shooting. Like those are the two things you look at and you're like, yeah, they could probably use some help there.
So we can probably move away, generally speaking, from the I'm going to take a top three player off a team that's not a top three seed. Those mock trades, we can just kind of throw those aside. Like the one of the wildest things, like we're in weird pre-trade deadline season and the trade machines are fired up. It always weirds me out when the names are like one of the top three best players on a team. Cause you're like, why would that team allow that player to leave? Why would they trade that guy? And when it's not beyond that, like it sounds like a thin market altogether. Like even if somebody wants to come for like a Kelly Olynyk from the Jazz, which the Jazz should be motivated to move someone, and Olynyk is like a guy, if we're talking about the Pelicans and needs that they have, Olynyk is a guy that could fill a couple of buckets for us in terms of the kind of looks that you could run with him. And yet he's like, probably that's the like one name that makes sense on a team that has a decent record that probably didn't expect to be as good as they are. But like people throw in like, oh, just throw the whole thing in and go get Lauri Markkanen. Like, why would the Jazz? Why Miami Heat gonna trade Bam? Like that, none of those teams are going to do this.
I was on the phone with somebody this week and I go, is the most likely outcome that the team you have now is the team you have after the trade deadline? And the person went, yeah, that's always the most likely outcome because trades are hard.
I mean, it's so simple, but it's perfect. Trades are hard. trades are really hard, and especially in the world we're in right now, where it's like, for something to happen with these types of players, the salaries that they have, these things turn into three teamers real quick. And that just quintuples the complexity of the deal, because the motives for everybody are very different. It's not this NBA 2K thing where I can just go get, you know, the approximate value that I need to get the person I want. And if the value's right, deal goes through. It sounds like a lean market. Sounds like there's probably only a couple of names that are actually like real fits for us. And we're already a pretty deep team. You know, like I'm fairly confident in a lot of people that could shoulder playoff minutes if they needed to. So it's hard to say that it's like a pressing need to go get something. But I mean, you know, we could always use a little bit more shooting. You know, we have one real volume shooter. Granted, CJ has really stepped it up recently. We have one volume shooter on the team in Trey. So having another one would be huge. That's why Bojan is such a huge deal, and because he's so big. The other thing, like, obviously, we would love more rebounding and rim defense. If you watch us every night, like, we have a rebounding disadvantage basically every night. That has been fixed a little bit by the introduction of more Dyson minutes, and now a playable Jackson Hayes, who, you know, thank God, I think it was an intent to have him have a role when we came into the season, and then we were staring down the, like, can you get him on the floor? And luckily he took it all in stride, and he's back to being a playable guy. Tell you what, I don't want to get in a bidding war for Bojan. Double digit interested teams. Oof. Sounds like Detroit's gonna do all right getting some value on that extension they gave him.
Yeah, I will say, I think he's a very attractive player and a very nice fit with a lot of the core New Orleans already has in place, just because he is such a proven outside shooter. We have seen him thrive on those Utah Jazz teams where I think quick decision-making was prioritized under Quinn Snyder. Like, I could see him being a fairly seamless fit, especially on the offensive end on this team. And I think Willie would trust him too enough on defense. You and I have talked about a lot, and I think you pointed out accurately that, you know, when it comes down to, well, defense versus offense, Willie's usually going to go with the guy who he trusts on the defensive end a lot of the time. So, like, I think Bogdanović would make a lot of sense, and you don't have to worry about, like, renegotiating with him after the summer. Like, he's just, right, you know, under contract for the next 2 years. You don't have to worry about that. But yeah, that being said, I don't want to get into crazy bidding war for him either. I can understand why. But he's the type of guy who makes sense. I see people have, like, just speculated on, like, Malik Beasley, just because he's, you know, like a high volume three-point shooter.
Having a great year shooting.
Yeah. Like, his jump shot is beautiful. Like, just more wing shooting. Like, obviously that's something, you know, you could use. Like, Malik is a really good athlete too. You know, the Pelicans for years and years and years have been kind of linked to, well, could they get in on Miles Turner? And I think we said a few weeks ago, the reporting suggested that Miles and the Pacers could work out an extension before the deadline. Now it seems like maybe they won't get a deal done. That has been a pretty hilarious saga. I was thinking about, since our the last time we talked about potential trades too, here's a guy I've thought about a little bit, and this is just my personal opinion. There's not really any reporting. What do you think about Naz Reid?
I mean, I watch LSU college basketball, so I'm a Naz Reid fan. I'm especially a fan, though, like, to be, like, beyond just being LSU guy. Naz this year, looking at his body and knowing what he was in college and knowing what he was coming out of high school, like, he did 1 year in college. He did the exact same thing he did in high school. You know, he's one of those guys that, like, you know, his body type was like, you know, he's a little too small to be a center, but he's a little too thick to be an athletic power forward. How's he going to fit in the league? He could shoot a little bit. And his shooting numbers were actually even better in clutch moments for in college. And then, like, he gets a little bit of run. Like, he works his way onto the Timberwolves team. You know, he was not guaranteed his minutes, not guaranteed his spot. He fought his way into it. And you look at him now, his body looks completely different. He is completely leaned out. He does only what is asked of him. And I still trust him to knock down an open three as a big guy. So, I really, really like him. I didn't think he'd come this far this fast based on what he was at LSU. Like at LSU, he was second effort guy. I'm going to grab my own offensive rebound and put it back in, or I'm going to shoot a three that you're not expecting me to take because I'm so huge. And he'd knock that stuff down. Like it was clear he had the talent to make it in the league, but we're 2 years in now and he's got a body that like, he's going to stick. And you know, he's expiring in many. I think he checks a lot of boxes for us. So, I mean, hey, let's call up our guy Dane and see, Mini looking at letting him go. Like, what are we going to do here? How do we feel these days about this whole Rudy thing? Should we have just kept Walker Kessler?
Hey, Mark Lauren, A-Rod, let's do some Vegas bombs and talk Naz Reid. How do you guys feel about that?
I love it.
They seem like big Vegas bombs, guys.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Naz Reid this year, 38% for three, about three attempts per game. You know, he would be... Like, I feel like you could really go five out with him at the five and Zion at power forward. Like, that is why that is attractive to me. You know, he's an unrestricted free agent after this year. If you got a deal done, you know, hopefully you'd, you know, kind of had an understanding that, well, here's a figure that if we offered this to you, is there a good chance you would take it? You know, you don't want to just trade something for him and then the guy walks or anything like right. that. But yeah, I mean, I mean, Larry can shoot the three a little bit. I think him and Zion are a pretty good fit, you know, when they do go small and the numbers have borne that out. But I'm worried about putting too much strain on Larry. I still like, you know, going him with him at the five in certain instances. I like that look. I just feel like the Pelicans have done it so much. Like, I almost worry about the load that he is carrying, basically. So I
completely that's why agree.
That one makes a little sense to me.
Yeah, completely agree. We've talked about it before. I don't mind him missing some of these games, like the, you know, this rest game with Dallas and everything. Like I want his knees in a good place and I want his shoulder in a good place come playoff time, come end of the season. You know, we've leaned on him. Like you told us before the season started that he was going to have a huge role and I never imagined it would be as heavy as it is. And I think a lot of that was due to early season, like Jax's injury and lack of trust after that injury, like to be able to reliably give him 15 minutes. And, you know, I think we'll go back and forth forever about the fact that they could have leaned on JV a little bit more and should have taken some chances with him and given him the opportunity to show you whether or not he can handle certain guys. Because JV, like, he can surprise you sometimes with guys he can work. He has there's a running list of guys that get an advantage on JV. And it's the same guys every year. Like Steven Adams, for whatever reason, is like, he's like JV kryptonite. I don't know what the hell the deal is, but that's a thing. And it's a thing every year now.
I would love to see a remake of the movie Predator, but with Jonas Valanciunas and Steven Adams. Like only the most badass NBA centers in there now.
Yeah, and then the way it actually turns into a buddy comedy and instead they go ice fishing. halfway in the movie, they turn into the grumpier old men and Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon go hang out and ice fish. Anyway, yeah, that's a reference not for the crowd that listens to this. that's my childhood coming out.
Before we get into the takeaways, let me just ask you this gut reaction. Would you put the Lakers swap / Pelicans pick in the upcoming draft on the table for Bogdanovich?
Would I put the Lakers swap up for Bogdanovich? I don't think the Lakers... It's getting less valuable because they're actually playing kind of hard. They figured some things out. It's tough because like I thought it was a surefire top five pick.
Right now, it would be the 11th or 12th pick most likely, and you have like an 8% chance at leaping to the top four.
Right. Man, that's tough, because if you think it's going to fall top eight, like all of those guys, cheap contracts, rookie contracts, like that's the stuff that that's the fuel that this team needs to run on for the future. You need to keep finding value in the draft. It's still a better pick than ours.
You still have unprotected Lakers first in 24 or 25 and a future first from Milwaukee with some swaps from Milwaukee in there.
You're talking about giving up this year's and we keep the deferrable 24-25 pick?
Yeah, I'm talking about you trade your 2023 first, and that I'm assuming that when you trade that pick, it also includes that has swap rights with the Lakers, right? That's what I mean by that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm content. I think I'm content with that. Because this year's not as is not as important to me for the Lakers pick as much as that 24-24 deferrable. That thing is that's my crown jewel that I don't really want to give up unless it's part of, you know, a move for a guy that's moving you up a tier. You could convince me of that. Like Bojan is a perfect fit here. And it's a guy that has lots and lots of playoff experience for a good team. Like he's used to playing with guys who are high usage. You're not wrong that he's a seamless fit. I'd do it. I'd be cool with it.
I would have to think hard about it. Okay. I just wanted to get your take on that.
It's only because the Lakers are playing better. And now I thought their pick was going to be very Wembanyama-ish. And it's looking a lot less Wemby-ish these days. It's looking a lot more, I don't even know the names of the guys that are going to be in 5 to 10. I check out after the Thompson twins.
Yeah, the other part I think about it too is Zion is not a normal 22-year-old player. Like if Zion can stay healthy, like I think in the next 2-3 years, like he could be the best player in a team that, you know, is a finals team or something like that. Like he is that good, that young. So like part of me is like, well, you should kind of push some chips in because they have a lot of talent on this team, including a guy who I think can be like the number one on a finals team or something like that. So I go back and forth.
I think you're right. Like I think there are some people that believe that to the extreme of like, you should push all your chips in right now on an even bigger play because your window is today, because the West is wide open. So go take it. I don't trust that. I'm not ready to do the full chip push in, this season, but yeah, I think I buy that I'll get into this a little bit in our next segment, the takeaways. I think we've seen a little bit of a fast forward on some of the progress that we were looking for some of our players and for the team in general. I think the barometer of this team, I think we found out a lot more than we probably expected to. And it does look like that window is a little sooner than we might have thought.
And I also can't tell how much my judgment is being clouded by how kind of stinky the West is right now. Like, I think part of why I'm feeling this way, I'm like, there's no team in the West where I'm like, oh, even if the Pelicans, you know, did make an upgrade, like there's no chance that they could beat them. I mean, I think Denver's really good. I think Memphis is really good. Golden State would scare me to play come playoff time, but they obviously haven't played well so far. But I mean, I think part of the reason I feel like I feel is the West feels so wide open right now.
Yeah, it does. But even so, like, you know, like you said, Denver's healthy for the first time in years. Memphis, regardless of what iteration of that team and who gets hurt, has been able to beat anybody. But the other half of the league, like when we came into the season, we were having a really tough debate when you're talking about like what the ceiling for the Pelicans could be. You had to take one of like the Dallas Mavericks or somebody and throw them down into the play-in. It's like, wow, who are you going to do that to? And it was a really difficult conversation. And now all of a sudden, like, it wouldn't shock me if Phoenix ends up in the play-in. Like that's possible. Dallas, for all of Luka's fantastic play, the the team around him is not, like, it is not better than prior years. It is not getting better. The surrounding cast, the supporting cast is not getting better. They, I mean, who knows if they could have done anything to stop Jalen Brunson from leaving, given that his dad is an employee where he currently is. But they needed to, because Spencer Dinwiddie is not Brunson in terms of the reliability on ball and being able to run essentially a second unit offense that's as potent as the first, or at least resembles it in some way, you know, allows those role players to remain role players. Because let me tell you, the guys they have, you cannot push them into more responsibilities. Those guys are strictly the thing that they do. And if you try to put them on other teams, like if you try to put them on the Celtics or even on the Pelicans, those guys would fall a little bit down the roster in terms of where you'd play them. It's weird. Preseason wouldn't have bet that any of those teams were like gonna fall out like that. And yeah, now it looks like it. And you know, the Jazz started hot. Now they're cooling off. It's very, very interesting. The West is not what we thought.
No. All right, let's do the takeaways. We each, I'm assuming you wrote down five. Is that right?
I wrote down five. I followed your lead. You told me.
Okay.
You told me.
So we've each got five takeaways from the first half of the season written down. I'm going to let you run through your list first. If I have any ones that are similar or the same, I will pipe up. But we'll run through yours first.
You undoubtedly will. All right. Number one and two kind of play off each other, but number one, I think the injuries that we've experienced in the first half of the season were a bit of a blessing in disguise, only in the sense that we have been able to explore a lot more of the roster than you would have imagined by now. You've been able to give a lot of players real minutes, and they've shown up in those minutes to the point where you probably feel comfortable having looks in the playoffs that you would not have expected to be comfortable with. Like we're looking at being comfortable with 20 minutes of Dyson, and before the season, I don't know that we would have gotten there. Najee has been able to explore himself in a way that makes him really trustworthy. Like you want to put all those wings on the floor now. And I just think the different types of ways that we have been able to put up a fight, they have fought in every game, including the losses. They've really only been trounced twice. And that's despite like not having Zion, not having BI, not having both at the same time, missing Herb, missing Nance, like true, like key top eight players on your team, your playoff rotation guys, and they're still getting the wins that they should get. Sign of a good team. But I think Willie has now gotten some evidence of some players and some situations that he can throw out there that it's going to be useful come playoff time. Because I think the things that you want ISO scorers, you want multiple ways to win, you want adaptive defense. And I think we have a lot of those things.
I like this takeaway a lot. I think part of the reason they found Point Zion was the injury stuff. A lot of that occurred while Brandon Ingram was out of the lineup. And I think that was a positive for the Pelicans. Kevin Garnett had a good tweet on this subject a couple of nights ago when the Pelicans were playing the Nets. KG said, the Pelicans have built something where you don't even peep their top two guys have been out. Run through an MF and wall culture. No excuses. Yeah, man. I'm with you. It has been a positive. Najee Marshall has been a revelation this year. Dyson Daniels is a really, 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 really good, gifted defensive player, deepest team in the league. We've said that a million times. So I'm with you on that.
And so that obviously my next takeaway would be that Najee Marshall is consistent chaos. He is an anomaly of a basketball player in that he can be one of the most chaotic beings out there. And in the past, that might have been frowned upon, but he is consistently chaotic in the best way humanly possible. I never imagined. I am a Najee supporter from summer league forward. Did not watch. I will not claim that I like watched him and found him in college. I'll leave that for Mark Schindler. But I did love him coming out of Summer League because I just really thought he had stuff that could stick. I never imagined that I would see him as somebody that I want on the floor like this, where like he is one of the guys, like if I need to pinch him into the starting lineup, I'm cool with it. I want him to be one of my first guys off the bench, and I trust him. And it's, you know, it's a laugh fest. He's a ball of energy, and he's a weirdo, and it's great. But he's been legitimately good. The shooting confidence has been so much better. He can drive as well as most people on the team, not named Zion. He's a versatile guy, and he's gotten more of it to work at the NBA level than I would have even expected. It's like you've said, Willie might be the best coach for him. I think you're right, because this has been a great season for him. It's more than I ever expected, and I already love the guy.
My personal vote for funniest Pelicans player, too. 60% intentional, 40% unintentional.
Yes.
I'm having so much fun, it's not even called fun anymore. It's just a regular day.
It's just Tuesday. Yeah, no, Najee's the best, and I just didn't expect this from him. Like as soon as they declared everybody out for the Dallas game, I'm like, Najee's getting 30, he's getting 40, something fun's coming. He got a new career high. He didn't quite get a 30 or 40 burger. I wanted it badly, even in a loss. Like, forget it, take the loss. I don't care. Which, by the way, do have to say, I almost turned that game back on all the way in the fourth quarter when all of a sudden they snuck that thing down to like 9 points for a second there, down from like 17. Everybody on this team fights. That's the one thing, like when a casual fan tells me they're going to go to a Pelicans game, and it doesn't matter who's going to sit out. And I think this is a thing that we can talk about. They are putting out a consistent product every night, regardless of whether the roster is consistent. And they're going to fight every night. They're going to have a chance. Whether they get there or not, you're probably going to be proud of them when they're done. And that's all you can ask for. That's really all you can ask for in the regular season. All right. My next one, this has to be, I'm sure this is one of yours. If it's not, I would be stunned. Zion is a 1% of 1% NBA beast that you need for real contention in the NBA. He is that guy. I think we could have debated it before, but he is a Giannis, prime LeBron, like Luka Doncic. He is a Nikola Jokic. He is those guys. He is in their league. And he is the type of dude that you need to build a team around in order to ruin people's nights on a night by night basis when they think they have a plan. And then, like Mike Tyson always says, you know, and then you get punched in the mouth. He is that dude. He is one of those. It's not top 20 players. That all NBA first team clause, the only question's health. Because the playing ability in the last 10 games that he put on the floor, on the defensive end, passing, it looks like what was promised from the beginning. And I can't wait for him to get back out there.
Yeah, my Zion note was point Zion is the best Zion. And I agree with your point, definitely. In fact, I wrote something after those Phoenix games, and I basically said, I think the Pelicans can be contenders this year because the roster is so good and Zion is like a guy I can truly imagine being the number one on a championship contending team. As far as the point Zion stuff goes, you know, I think we, like, at least for me personally, coming out of the SVG year, the Stan Van Gundy year, I was like, okay, like this was something. Is this entirely sustainable, or did they just do this because they had no other options, really? I don't know. I thought it was something, but I didn't trust it completely. And I feel like I trust it completely now. Like, this is the way. Wrote down a couple of stats for you. I think things kind of flip there in late November. You know, often at the beginning of the year, they're using him largely as a, or more often as a post-up player. His last 15 games, averaging 21 drives. His first 14 games, average 11 drives. Post-ups are down by almost two per game in that stretch as well. So numbers are kind of boring out. Look, he's just, they're giving the ball top of the key a lot more, letting him create. They're not dumping it to him in the post as much. He gets energy and enjoys playing that way, I think. I mean, I think that's where he's most comfortable, but he loves playing that way. And I think that means something too.
I think what we saw was probably like the convergence of him getting up to like his physical, the physical capacity to be able to be on the ball that much, and Brandon Ingram leaving the lineup. I think both of those things kind of converged at the same time and gave us the beautiful violence that is Zion getting downhill from above the 3-point arc. It's crazy, crazy stuff. I'm so thrilled that he's on the team. I'm so thrilled he's as bought in as he is. You can, like, Giannis is the closest thing I can compare him to. They're not, their bodies are complete opposites. But in terms of the advantage they gain you, it's very, very similar. The fact that both of them have ball skills, are huge players. Granted, Zion physically huge in, you know, width and girth, and Giannis with his octopus tentacle arms. But those two guys there isn't a defense for them. Now, granted, we've seen some teams build walls against him and whatnot, like throw three guys in front of the rim, and he's had some struggles, but he's adjusted. The biggest thing about these last 10 games is like he adjusted to that and found other ways to get it done. Started popping off that midi, started coming with a plan at the rim, and started like faking right and then doing a little scoop under going left, or went right. You know, like he seemed like he had more of a plan. And when you talk about the SVG year, that's not what it was. It was, I'm always going left, I'm running into your bodies, and I'm hoping for the best. And there were a lot of turnovers. There were a lot of messy balls lost at the free throw line on the way in. You know, he was able to be stopped. It still looked great because, you know, 60% of the time, he's going to get there just by sheer force. But he clearly is developing a craft with it now. So I'm right there with you. I trust it going forward because I think he's just going to keep developing it.
Yeah. I mean, the other part of this too is, you know, these 15 or 20 games before the hamstring injury occurred was by far the best defense he's played at the NBA level. Like a switch was flipped on that end. And I think that was also a very significant development where the Pelicans could switch and he was not dying having to, you know, defend guys on the perimeter. They could go in rotation and, you know, he wasn't like losing the plot very quickly. So I think that was a very significant development. And then one last note, I think the way the Memphis Grizzlies and the Milwaukee Bucks guarded him in some recent games is the most effective way I've seen for a defense to guard and load up on him, and something that I think we could see more of as the games get more important. And what I mean by that is put a stout perimeter type defender on him, either Jrue Holiday or Dylan Brooks in these instances, and then pack the paint with your big guys, your Jaren Jackson Juniors, your Steven Adams, your Brook Lopez's, your Giannis Antetokounmpo's. You know, they were able to do that in part by just kind of ignoring some of the other guys around Zion. Why, you know, that's one reason why it might be more important to get a little more shooting in here. But I think that is something that the teams are going to file away and maybe could go towards come playoff time.
Definitely. All right, so moving on to number four. I could just summarize this as like CJ McCollum, period. And that could be my takeaway. But CJ McCollum is the perfect on-court leader for this team. And I thought that before this recent hot stretch. But now you see it and you're reminded of the guy that was a murderer in Portland, the guy that that teams legitimately game plan and fear when they come up against him, because he's going to manipulate you. He's going to open himself up. He's going to knock down tough shots. And there are just spots on the floor where it doesn't matter if you defend him well, he's going to knock it down. To see him as aggressive as he's been in the last handful of games, coming back after illness and whatnot, it's just nice to see it all together. And now it should be evident to the greater public why that trade was made and why he was such a good fit here. And I'm glad, because, you know, I some weird people got some, you know, trashy opinions out there about CJ and his age and how it's going to go and all that. It's just nice to be reminded, like, he basically rewound himself to being 26 years old and just buried some people. And it's nice. He's breaking ankles. He's burying tough buckets. He's hammering threes. He's shooting them in transition. He is attacking with, like, with speed and violence. He is attacking transition buckets. And it just, it's cool to see him kind of turn back the clock and kind of remind people who he is. And that's in addition to all of the other stuff that comes with the CJ McCollum. The fact that he is the guy that is, like, you know, he's the president of the Players Association, and he's the president of your heart. He's the guy keeping shit together, keeping the trains running on time, telling guys what they need to be doing, telling guys what winning looks like. And now he's showing them too on the elite of elite levels. It's just nice to see him turn it back and get that back. And also, like, quietly, one of his problems the past few years had been his free throws. And all of a sudden, 82%. Last 3 years, he'd been like 68, 70, 71. And now all of a sudden, he's back to normal as free throws. I don't know what the hell happened for the 3 years prior. But yeah, he has found his way through the hoop again from the charity stripe.
I think one of the things to continue to watch with CJ is him striking the balance between, like, being a 0.5 lead guard and him being this incredible isolation scorer who is sometimes a deliberate player. I think there's been a give and take in terms of that. And I think, obviously, I think it's, like, gone extremely well overall, but especially when Zion and Brandon come back, you know, like, can that ball continue to pop is one of the things I'm going to be looking for sure.
Definitely. So my final, and I think this is probably the most obvious takeaway, as much as we've learned about this team and the variety of ways that they can attack another team or defend another team, you know, obviously this could be a lot of things. Like, I could say, you know, they're a great defensive team. That was not something we thought was going to happen. We were hoping they'd be middling. They're a good defensive team. I think the biggest thing remaining is that we do not know what the ceiling of this team is. So my final takeaway is that I still don't know what they are come playoff time, because we have seen so little of CJ, BI, and Zion together. There is a ceiling we have not even tapped yet. And I think we almost in a poetic way got a glimpse of it against Brooklyn in that opening game, even though Brooklyn was really bad to start the year. We saw those three play together really cohesively and an offense that just looked like a juggernaut. And then we saw it kind of come down to earth. Then next thing you know, BI's out and we're doing a whole different thing. We don't know what we are. We know a lot of things about us, but we don't know what we truly can be at the elite, in the elite of elite moments. And that's my biggest question mark for the season. It's my biggest curiosity with BI coming back, and hopefully, like, injury timing can be a little fortunate. BI can come back in and kind of get settled back in just in time for Zion to return and mesh that all together. And we can make a sweet, sweet gumbo of elite basketball murder.
How many gumbo metaphors have been used in the history of the city? I just read Mark Muriel's book on my iPad, and his book is called The Gumbo Coalition.
Well, I mean, look, we've been working on this roof for a while, and we took it off right before it turned, like, dark brown. We got just that nice nuttiness, It's going to be the base of the whole thing. Whole problem is we just don't know, like, how long are we going to simmer this thing?
Hopefully more than 10 games in the second half of the season.
Oh, dear God.
Okay.
All right, sir, your turn.
All right. Well, I kind of said my Zion one, so you got my thoughts on point Z on there. I want to start with two that are kind of more focused on the defense, because that has been one of the most surprising aspects of the first half of the season. The Pelicans are ranked
I'm glad I didn't go there.
In defensive efficiency, which literally no one thought they would be this good of a defensive team. I mean, the folks I talked to internally at Pelicans are like, hopefully we'll be like, you know, somewhere average, maybe a little bit better than that. You know, we just need to be competitive on that end and the offense will take care of itself. They have been a better defensive team than offensive team. You know, if you're just going by the pure ranking, and look, those two things are related. But yeah, it has been surprising that they have been this tough defensively, to say the least. All of which leads me to my first point. The front office's bet on getting size in here, I think, has been a huge positive for this team. If you just look at the 15 guaranteed contracts, you know, of the rotation players, there are seven switchy wing types: Zion, B.I., Herb, Trey, Najee, Larry, Dyson. I threw Larry in there, even though he's more of like a big, but yeah, you kind of see what I mean by that.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much since I came here, I've heard folks with this team say, like, we want to put as much size and skill on the floor at one time as possible. And I mean, obviously, like, you see what works come playoff time. Like, a lot of these teams that are having success are teams that can't be exploited defensively. And they have built this roster with just so many, you know, guys between 6'4" and 6'9" who are pretty capable defensive players. And they have this identity where they generate a ton of steals. They're second in the NBA steals. They get a lot of deflections. They're fourth in deflections. They, you know, create like transition opportunities because of that stuff. You know, part of that is Willie's too, but I just think they benefit a lot from having a lot of big guys on the floor at one time. Like, playing defense is so hard nowadays, the rule changes and how skilled offensive players are. So one advantage you can have is just by being really long. You know, maybe you come up with steals, you can get passing lanes, you can be disruptive, and the Pelicans are able to do that.
I thought I was being optimistic when I said they'd finish 15th. I thought that was an optimistic take. And I made this argument. I was like, they're not necessarily going to be the most disciplined, like, bouncing on a string kind of defense, but I think they're going to be a chaotic mess that causes turnovers. They are a chaotic mess that causes turnovers. But they're 15th. Dear God, they're way better than that. And consistently. And I think it comes down to, like you said, it's the amount of size that's out there. And, you know, I noticed really, really early on, and we've talked about it throughout the season, it's beyond clear to me that the toss-up decisions in your lineups, night to night, your rotations, your matchups, Willie's going to lean defense first. He is not going to put somebody out there that is going to get victimized, that has the potential to get victimized over somebody that he trusts defensively, even if that means there's going to be an offensive gap. And I go through this every night where I think it is very in vogue right now to think, when in doubt, if you're losing a game, put out more offense. The problem is that every night you're playing against a Luka, a Giannis, a Jokic. You can't forsake defense in those closing moments either. Like, part of how you get and how this team gets back into games is to turn you over. So if I put in a guy because it's like, oh, I may get a little bit better offense, it might also mean I give up 10 more points than I wanted to. So it's, you know, I'm stunned that they're this good. Again, I thought I was being optimistic with 15. Now I look like an idiot, and I'm so thrilled to. And we have the potential to be a better offense than defense still, if we can ever get all our guys out there at the same time.
What you just said was my next point exactly. It's something you've talked a lot about on this show. Willie is going to choose defense over offense most of the times. I went through the Pelicans and I sorted them by minutes played in the fourth quarter per game. Here's how that goes. CJ McCollum is first, 8.7. Zion is second. Brandon Ingram is third. Okay, your top three guys. That makes sense. Herb Jones is fourth. Jose Alvarado is fifth. Larry Nance Jr. is sixth. Najee Marshall is seventh. And Trey Murphy is eighth. That is a very telling stat to me. And it is interesting, too. The Pelicans have the fourth best offense in fourth quarters this season and the 27th best defense in fourth quarters, which when I looked it up, I was very surprised. I was like, oh, okay. I don't even know really what to make of that entirely. You know, like how they've been so good offensively in fourth quarters and bad defensively in fourth quarters. Maybe it's they already had the leads a lot of the night. And when you have a lead, you know, the other team's just naturally going to come back.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, as far as the players sorted by minutes per game in the fourth quarter, like that tells you a whole lot about who Willie trusts when it's important, I think.
And also a stylistic look thing too, because you said all those names and a name you didn't say was Jonas Valanciunas.
He's 10th.
Yeah. So that just gives you an idea. Like, so I think some friends of mine and I talk about this all the time. Like, does Willie know who we want to be because of all the stuff that's changed and all the, you know, the merry-go-round of players that he's used? Does he know what we want to be? Yeah. It's pretty clear. He wants to play five out, and that's why Nance has gotten so much volume. Like, that's what he wants when the times get tough. That's what he wants in the playoffs. And that does put, you know, that does put JV in a situation where, you know, I don't want to run him out there a ton. Now, do you need to have that look? Like, offensively, sometimes when we get bogged down, like, JV is just such a consistent performer, and we have so many guys that get hurt and so many guys that get, you know, need to go out for a breather and whatnot, that like, he's just such a stalwart person to lean on. But yeah, I think Willie's been very, very clear with what he prefers. And it's hard to argue with, given the trends of the teams that have won championships in the recent past. Like, that switchy style of defense, especially when you're coupling it with trying to be a 0.5 offense, that's the MO of all the elite teams. So I get it. I totally understand. And it seems like it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is a little tied into what I have next. The person who has had to adjust the most to Zion Williamson being back in the lineup is Jonas Valanciunas. I mean, I think Zion being back has impacted him offensively. There is less space on the interior for him. And I think defensively, you know, kind of the ripple effects are the biggest reason why his role is reduced a little bit this season. As you just said, Zion is, I think, shown a lot of improvement on the defensive end over the course of the season. He was pretty bad, I thought, at the start of the season. I think he's gotten to a place where he's been somewhere between average and good, like for 15 or 20 games or so. But yeah, I mean, like, I think during crunch time, obviously you have to have Zion out there to be an offensive engine, but it's tough to have both Zion and JV out there defensively. Well, it feels like he's got to have Larian to, I think, protect Z and do the switchy stuff he wants to do 1 through 5. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's like they traded JV because it's like, well, this is a better fit next to Zion than Steven Adams. And I think it is. I don't think it is a seamless fit or anything like that, but it is hard to find a great fit as a center next to Zion, to be honest. I mean, he's an incredibly talented player, but yeah, it's not easy to find that ideal fit, you know? Like,
yeah,
there's not just Brooke Lopez is out there everywhere.
Brooke, you know? Lopez, Karl Anthony Towns, Jokic, like Embiid. Like, there's only five of those dudes that are actually real. This is the thing that irritates me about people talking about Miles Turner. Because if you actually watch him play every night, his stats may suggest that he could be that dude. He is not one of those people. He is not one of those guys whose names I just said. His shooting volume is not what you think. It doesn't change a defense. they're just going to leave him out there. And that's why he knocks him down, because he gets left alone. And yeah, there's only like five of those dudes. So there is not a great fit next to Zion. Like, again, you talked a lot recently about, like, that's what's so appealing about Jackson when Jackson's hot, is like, you can see how it could work. You could see why it could work. That amount of athleticism, that amount of switchability, like, you could see why it would work. But yeah, the five that matches, that works with Zion, like the perfect center to go next to him, it basically doesn't exist, because the ones that it would need to be to have the actual impact that you need are unacquirable. So,
honestly, the one guy I'd want to see most next to him is Victor Wembanyama.
Well,
yeah.
Vic, I don't know. No, like, center. I think, like, Vic's a wing.
I think, like, Jared Allen would be really good next to Zion. I mean, Evan Mobley, I think, would be good.
So Mobley would be good defensively, but don't go look at his shooting numbers this year. You'd be real disappointed with Mobley in shooting. And Allen, kind of the inverse. Like, you get the rim defense, and he's definitely a lot more mobile and switchable, but you lose shooting entirely. It's just putbacks.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. I don't think there is a perfect fit that is actually gettable, unless you draft him.
Unfortunately, they're going to be out of Wembanyama range.
Well, hey, you know, it's probably already sealed up. If you just look at the level of tankerificness that's happening with, especially San Antonio, like, San Antonio is really putting in some extra effort with what's been going on over there. Even though, shout out to my boy Jeremy Sohan, who we talked about first episode we ever did. He's gotten thrust into big minutes, and he looks like he's going to stick. He looks like a real dude. Nice to see. Just little validation. Pretty excited about that. But now Devin Vassell's out of their lineup, and there's just no shooting at all. They're never going to win a game. It's impossible. If somebody loses to them, like, someone should be arrested. Someone should be charged with a war crime if you lose to San Antonio.
They are not a good basketball team. And
I mean, we just finished talking about how bad Houston is, and San Antonio is just like trying to top that.
Yeah. I don't, like, when I watch San Antonio, I'm just like, you guys aren't that good. But like, when I watch Houston, I'm like, I actively hate watching you guys play. Yeah.
Did you know that, I don't know if you follow Andy Bailey or ever see the tweet threads of the combined defensive metric, or the combined player value metrics, and like seeing where guys rank on everybody's teams. He like posts them every week. And you know who the second highest player on the Houston Rockets is? Kevin Porter Jr.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's in the 80s, which just tells you that metrics are flawed. Metrics are flawed. Kevin Porter Jr. is not the second best player on the Rockets.
You know what Rockets player I do like? I like Jayshon Tate a lot.
If he could ever play this year.
I know.
I love that guy. That was a guy that, like, last year I was hoping, like, could we sneak in and, like, steal him? Super versatile. You want to talk about switchy. He does a little bit of everything. But he's also, like, one of those dudes. There's a ceiling on the value of what he can be because of what he can do for you offensively. Like, he has these randomly hot nights, but I mean, there's a cap on what he is as a player. You can't go out of your way to like spend to acquire somebody like that. You just kind of got to find one of those guys in the draft or in, you know, undrafted free agency, a la Najee the Knife Marshall. You just got to go find him.
The Knife. Okay. Last one I had, I think a lot of this stuff devolves into pandering towards the fan base, and I don't do that. This is my honest assessment.
Do it.
I think the Pelicans have this season have had the best home court advantage in the NBA.
Let's go.
17-5 at the Blender. If you've been in there, you know that it is a special type of energy. That lower bowl is regular folks, and I mean that in the best way possible. Like so many other NBA arenas, it feels a little corporate. not at Smoothie King Center. And I mean that in the best way possible. These people are behind this team and you love to see it.
So I debated my fifth takeaway that I originally wrote down is the city is ready for this. And it's because of that. Like, people have been more excited about this team. A lot of people said this and wrote about it and said that if this team could consistently win, people would show up. We did when Chris Paul was great, when Chris Paul and crew were tearing it up, they had no problem selling tickets to games. And it was only whenever Anthony Davis's teams were good, there was no problem selling tickets. It's just that we went through a lot of stretches of who the hell is this guy that's playing tonight? He's in our starting five. Alonzo G. Oh, sure. Okay. We just went through a lot of that stuff. And like, you can't be shocked that in a small market that's young in the basketball world that, people don't really want to come out on a Tuesday to watch Alonzo G or Dante Cunningham play basketball. Now it's an event. It is a legitimate event, especially if Zion's out there, you might see something. And I think it's so incredible how it's gone, because like, you built it up with that run at the end of last year. You cemented it a little bit with the series against Phoenix being as competitive and as intense as it was. Then you went even further. Zion's exclamation point dunk on that win, and just like what a piece of theater that was for that crowd. I think all of it has just kind of melded together to make it clear, and just the effort level of the team on a night in, night out basis. I just don't think it's a bad buy anymore. That ticket is not a bad buy any night. Doesn't matter. Like, we talk about the NBA having their stars missing all the time. You're getting a show from the Pelicans every night. Doesn't matter who's out there. They're going to fight their asses off for you. They are going to make you think that they can win that game, even when they shouldn't. It's all you can ask for. It's all the city can ask for, and they're bought in.
You said it, man. I mean, it is pretty much a good product and sometimes a great product. Anytime the Pelicans take the floor at Smoothie King Center, incredible turnaround year over year. Anyone who was in there the season before this, you know, especially before things started to turn in the spring, it was rough, man. And it is a fun, lively atmosphere every single night in there, even for the midweek game against the Houston Rockets, who I hope they don't get Victor Wembanyama.
Oh, dude, what an embarrassment that would be if that's where he went. Oh, but I feel bad for anybody. Like, what happens if I love Scoot too. What if Scoot ends up there? Like, that Scoot would be great if they could get off a Kevin Porter Jr. and you have Scoot and Jalen, and all of a sudden you have this crazy backcourt. That sounds awesome.
But I hope Scoot goes to Orlando. They need some guard play. And send him out east. You know, he won't be the Pelicans' problem. Send him east. I like Scoot on Orlando.
Franz, Wendell, and Scoot. Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. But I want Scoot too. So screw all them. Kid's 18 years old. He's a brick shithouse.
All right, man. Well, thank you for spending some time with me on Sunday night. Is it time to go put the kid to bed?
I'm looking over there and he's in Snooze City. So it's about that time.
All right. Well, you love to see it. Appreciate you guys listening. I am on these next three road games. I will talk to you again sometime this week from the road.
All right, buddy. Be safe on the road trip. Hopefully we get you some dubs, even with our, watered down lineups. Mm-hmm.